Hey everybody, welcome to the Hero Bells podcast. My name is Kyle McCaffrey, and today's episode is about mindset. And I'm going to read from the book Mindset by Carol Dweck. But who I am a lead trainer at Hero Bells. If you found this podcast through my Instagram, then you know all about me. But if not, you should go and check that out. You can check me out at hero_kbells on Instagram or herokbells on Facebook and herobells on YouTube, where I have tons of free workouts for you, including a 40-day challenge where you can get your ass off the couch and in reasonable shape, not the greatest shape. I mean, if you want to be in the greatest shape, you got to pay for that. And those programs to get you into that shape are coming soon. But right now, I've got some stuff up there for free. The last episode I read from the book Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience by Dr. Csikszentmihalyi. In that episode, among other things, I talked about how flow states and cultivating purpose are linked. But more importantly, they help you start a new thing and stick to it. I briefly mentioned a book that I'm going to read from today, Mindset by Carol Dweck. Sorry, Dr. Carol Dweck. I believe she earned the title. I mentioned it because it makes obvious the two different personalities we have within us, two different attitudes toward new information, the dichotomy controlling our success in anything we do. Before I go on, I just want to let you know that I do have a slight cold, and I've doubled up on the tea I usually have, just to, you know, help me flush the toxins out, whatever's going on in there. I hate being sick. It makes me so irritable. But anyway, if you're new to this podcast, you may be wondering why I focus so much on psychology. And that's because psychology and biology, which is the physical world and in my neck of the biology world, it's obviously related to fitness, but psychology plays a major part in the success of your biology and your how well your body performs. Because both cannot be without the other and are imperative for the success of any venture. The smartest people know already that physical fitness will free an unproductive mind. Conversely, athletes know that their mind is aligned correctly. The body is free to manifest the best possible result. Furthermore, the attitude will determine the relationship with failure. Now, if you don't know anything about me, which I'm fairly certain you don't, I started exercising with bodybuilding. It didn't last long. But then, like most 22-year-olds who are full of piss and vinegar, I sought vanity. Which, it's pretty safe to say that most people who get into bodybuilding do exactly that. And you can say fairly safely that many young men who do get into bodybuilding, or many men do get into bodybuilding, and they're usually quite young. The men that start off old, maybe they're not doing it for strictly vanity purposes, and that's totally okay. There is a huge competitive element to it that's really important to recognize, and I'm not trying to shit on bodybuilding. But I started working out because I got dumped by a beautiful woman, and it killed my ego. Hence the vanity workouts. I still work out with a fairly reasonable mindset, however. I love learning how to exercise by asking the jacked people at the gym, and I didn't only focus on my upper body. So I guess that's a feather in my cap. I wasn't walking around like a triangle. And that's not a bad start. That all being said, my mindset for my success so far clearly helped me get to that point that I'm at today. I'm certainly not perfect with the mindset, but I read this book, Mindset, about a year or so ago, and I didn't realize how little I practice controlling my mindset with other things. So things I didn't enjoy, the tedious things, or just other areas of my life. With bodybuilding or with exercise, I did. I was really good at it. I failed often, and I was good at failing. I was okay with failing, even though it still hurt. That was an area where I was totally okay with it. things that required the same discipline that I utilized, learning to control my body, were, I, let's just say, just about everything else in my life would easily go out of control. And what a shame to have never known about mindsets, yet what a relief to learn this dichotomy. Once I learned this concept, it changed my life forever. So please pick up this book and get a closer, more comprehensive view of what I'm about to read. For now, I'm going to drink some tea. And my poor throat. Dr. Carol Dweck, I love that name, excuse me, talks about the effects of self-belief. Here she goes. It's one thing to have pundits spouting their opinions about scientific issues. It's another thing to understand how these views apply to you. For 20 years, my research has shown that the view you adopt for yourself profoundly affects the way you lead your life. I'm going to say that again, because this is huge. My research has shown that the view you adopt for yourself profoundly affects the way you lead your life. So if you have a negative view of yourself and you think you're a piece of shit, you're going to live a life of a person that acts like a piece of shit. So don't do that. Maybe write something out on a piece of paper where you write it every single day. That is incredibly positive, is incredibly true, and will inspire you. That would be a pretty good thing to do. That's something that I do something similar to that. But that's a little bit personal, I suppose. Anyway, you have to adopt a better view of yourself. And be fair, too, because maybe you do suck. Maybe you suck at a lot of things. Maybe you, I don't know, maybe you yell at your wife. Maybe you hit your husband. Maybe you don't like your kids. whatever. Maybe you have bad road rage. But still, being truthful, I'm sure, positive, 100% positive, you have redeeming qualities. So, back to the book. It can determine whether you become the person you want to be and whether you accomplish the things you value. How does this happen? How can a simple belief have the power to transform your psychology and, as a result, your life? Believing that your qualities are carved in stone, which is the fixed mindset, creates an urgency to prove yourself over and over. If you have only a certain amount of intelligence, a certain personality, and a certain moral character, well, then you'd better prove that you have a healthy dose of them. It simply wouldn't do to look or feel deficient in these most basic characteristics. Some of us are trained in this mindset from an early age. Even as a child, I was focused on being smart, but the fixed mindset was really stamped in by Mrs. Wilson, my sixth grade teacher. Unlike Alfred Binet, she believed that people's IQ scores told the whole story of who they were. We were seated around the room in IQ order, and only the highest IQ students could be trusted to carry the flag, clap the erasers, or take notes to the principal. Aside from the daily stomach aches she provoked with her judgmental stance, she was creating a mindset in which everyone in the class had one consuming goal: look smart, don't look dumb. Who cared about or enjoyed learning when our whole being was at stake every time she gave us a test or called on us in class? I've seen so many people with this one consuming goal of proving themselves in the classroom, in their careers, and in their relationships. Every situation calls for confirmation of their intelligence, personality, or character. Every situation is evaluated. Will I succeed or fail? Will I look smart or dumb? Will I be accepted or rejected? Will I feel like a winner or a loser? But doesn't our society value intelligence, personality, and character? Isn't it normal to want these traits? Yes, but there's another mindset in which these traits are not simply a hand you're dealt and have to live with. always trying to convince yourself and others that you have a royal flush when you're secretly worried it's a pair of tens, which isn't bad. In this mindset, the hand you're dealt is just the starting point for development. This growth mindset is based on the belief that your basic qualities are things you can cultivate through your efforts. I'm going to say this again. This is the other side of it. You have the static mindset or the fixed mindset. And you have the growth mindset, which is based on the belief that your basic qualities are things you can cultivate through your efforts. Keyword, effort. Secondary word, cultivate. One of my favorite things to think about is one of the laws of the farm, if you will, which applies to the things you want to do in life. Plant, cultivate, harvest. The cultivation period is obviously the hardest. Anyone can drop a seed into something, into some dirt, and let nature do its magic. But cultivation requires nurturing and care. Back to the book. Although people may differ in every which way in their initial talents and aptitudes, interests, or temperaments, everyone can change and grow through application and experience. Do people with this mindset believe that anyone can be anything, that anyone with proper motivation or education can become Einstein or Beethoven? No. But they believe that a person's true potential is unknown and unknowable, that it's impossible to foresee what it can be accomplished with years of passion, toil, and training. There's the cultivate. Did you know that Darwin and Tolstoy were considered ordinary children? That Ben Hogan, one of the greatest golfers of all time, was completely uncoordinated and graceless as a child? That the photographer Cindy Sherman, who has been on virtually every list of the most important artists of the 20th century, failed her first photography course? That Geraldine Page, one of our greatest actresses, was advised to give it up for a lack of talent? You can see how the belief that cherished qualities can be developed creates a passion for learning. Why waste time proving over and over how great you are when you could be getting better? Why hide deficiencies instead of overcoming them? Why look for friends or partners who will just shore up your self-esteem instead of ones who will also challenge you to grow? I don't know how many times you might have seen it on social media about changing your circle of friends and your influences, or that you might be the culmination. You are the culmination of the five friends you have around you most, or people, doesn't really matter. Back to the book. The passion for stretching yourself and sticking to it, even or especially when it's not going well, is the hallmark of the growth mindset. This is the mindset that allows people to thrive during some of the most challenging times in their lives. That's really where the cultivation happens. Through the challenging times in your life, you might have a goal and you'll seek out that goal. And when it gets tough, that's the magic. It's like when you're exercising, those reps, what you feel like are at the end of the workout, even though the end of the workout isn't even the goal. The goal is maybe to have a 15-inch bicep. This is just a stupid bodybuilding example, instead of a 14-inch bicep, which, by the way, is small. I guess it's relative. But anyway, nonetheless, the goal might, you in that workout, you're not going to gain that extra inch of bicep. But maybe you could only get out 9 reps. You might be able to get 10. But pumping out that extra 10 is where the growth is really going to happen. And seeking out that little extra bit, I think that's where the cultivation really happens. So maybe at this point, you might see how I'm connecting the dots. The growth mindset is essential for being consistent, which is what I've been talking about for the past maybe 6 episodes, with all things that are difficult. I don't consider myself of extraordinary intelligence, but I know that regardless of that, my best results in life have been due to consistency, not my intelligence. Whatever level IQ I do have, can only manifest results through work and consistency. So as Dr. Carol Dweck is explaining, we don't have to be the smartest. We have to be the most consistent, starting with the mindset. There's a good quote I heard once. Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. I'll say it again. Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. We all know people who are, or at least maybe one person, who is super talented, and they're a lazy bastard. Or a lazy bitch. I don't know if you really care about the gender difference in those negative terms. We also do a great job on social media trying to show that we're the best version of ourselves, but it's only a version, maybe a veneer if you're pessimistic. Very few of us are showing struggle, at least not effectively. It's very difficult to do. It's hard to sell anything because everyone's selling something when you're showing how inadequate you are. But some are good at it, and some are more obvious, like people with visible disabilities, for instance. Those are my heroes. People who start off with less than me. Those people make me feel like a bitch because they have this mindset built in that they can and that they should. And all they want to do is be normal. And in their pursuit of being normal, they're already better than me. Especially when I'm having a day where I feel like complaining or whining, which sometimes I do. Like today, being sick, I turn into a big baby. I might call my mom. I don't know. I'm going to have a cup of tea in 1 sec. Cup of magic. We might want to be encouraging the learning process mindset a little more. And that's not just for fitness coaches or for clients. That's for everyone. Dr. Dweck gives you a better understanding with some scenarios in the following. A view from the two mindsets. To give you a better sense of how the two mindsets work, imagine as vividly as you can that you are a young adult having a really bad day. One day you go to class that is really important to you and that you like a lot. The professor returns the midterm papers to the class. You got a C+. You're very disappointed, which fuck you if a C+ is bad for you. There's so many things that a C+ in classes that I like was amazing. But anyway, I don't know why people complain about C+s. But anyway, you're very disappointed. That evening on the way back to your home, you find that you've gotten a parking ticket. Being really frustrated, you call your best friend to share your experience, but are sort of brushed off. What would you think? What would you feel? What would you do? When I asked people with the fixed mindset, this is what they said. I'd feel like a reject. I'm a total failure. I'm an idiot. I'm a loser. I'd feel worthless and dumb. Everyone's better than me. I'm slime, which is a little bit excessive. In other words, they'd see what happened as a direct measure of their competence and worth. This is what they'd think about their lives. My life is pitiful. I have no life. Somebody upstairs doesn't like me. The world is out to get me. Someone is out to destroy me. Nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. Life is unfair and all efforts are useless. Life stinks. I'm stupid. Nothing good ever happens to me. I'm the most unlucky person on the earth. I'm sure we've all, maybe not everybody, but I'm sure a lot of people, including myself, have said something or some variation of this. Back to Dr. Carol Dweck. Excuse me, was there a certain destruction or just a grade, a ticket, and a bad phone call? There was no death and destruction. Are these just people with low self-esteem or card-carrying pessimists? No. When they aren't coping with failure, they feel just as worthy and optimistic and bright and attractive as people with the growth mindset. So basically, if weather's good, they're good. As soon as things go bad, shit breaks down. So how would they cope? I wouldn't bother to put so much time and effort into doing well in anything. In other words, don't let anyone measure you again. Do nothing. Stay in bed. get drunk, eat, yell at someone if I get a chance to, eat chocolate, listen to music and pout, go into my closet and sit there, pick a fight with somebody, cry, break something. What is there to do? What is there to do? You know, when I wrote the vignette, I intentionally made the grade a C+, not an F. It was a midterm rather than a final. It was a parking ticket, not a car wreck. They were sort of brushed off, not rejected outright. Nothing catastrophic or irreversible happened. Yet from this raw material, the fixed mindset created the feeling of utter failure and paralysis. When I gave people with the growth mindset the same vignette, here's what they said they'd think. I need to try harder in class, be more careful when parking the car, and wonder if my friend had a bad day. The C+ would tell me I'd have to put in a lot more hard work in class, but I have the rest of the semester to pull up my grade. There are many, many more like this, but I think you get the idea. Now, how would they cope? Directly. I'd start thinking about studying harder, they would say, or studying in a different way for my next test in the class. I'd pay the ticket, and I'd work things out with my best friend the next time we spoke. I'd look at what was wrong on my exam, resolve to do better, pay a parking ticket, and call my friend to tell her I was upset the day before. Maybe work hard on my next paper, speak to the teacher, be more careful where I park or contest the ticket, and find out what's wrong with my friend. You don't have to have one mindset or the other to be upset. Who wouldn't be? Things like a poor grade or a rebuff from a friend or a loved one, these are not fun events. No one was smacking their lips with relish. Yet those people with the growth mindset were not labeling themselves and throwing up their hands. Even though they felt distressed, they were ready to take risks, confront the challenges, and keep working at them. Personally, I think we've all had these instances where we have played through both mindsets. I know that there are many reasons why one day you didn't mind that things didn't go that well, and other days that it was a single straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, you come home from a bad day. I mean, if you're a woman and you live with men, sure, you come home and you've had a bad day and you go, God damn it, someone put the seat up. Leave the seat down. I hear this all the time. I live with two women. With some practice, we can make the positive occurrences more likely. We can practice with a system of thought. We live in a world that is never short on inspiration. I mean, if you're on Instagram and you don't have some sort of channel of inspiration, it'd be very surprising. I suppose either way, it wouldn't be. Because some people are just that pessimistic. They can't handle someone doing well and being doing something that's inspirational. But it is short on practical, useful, tangible tools. It's really hard to do. I think that it should be that way, though, or else we would be devoid of much of the struggle. If it was that easy, everyone would do it. We have many of our seemingly physical struggles that require mental solutions. And that's very difficult to do, especially on your own. You don't have a person policing your automatic thoughts and emotions to coach you. You only have you. So we know that we need to challenge our mind to stick to a growth mindset. And this is key in novel states, which means new information, new situations, that's a word, it is now. New information seems to be the catalyst that, pardon the term, triggers the emotional response from our amygdala, and at this point, it determines the way in which the neocortex receives the information, which therefore can determine our attitude. And this is my armchair psychological opinion, so take it for what it's worth. Personally, I've been struggling, albeit upwardly, with my mindset, and one trick that helps me most often is saying no. Pardon me. Both yes and no are powerful words, and both require artful application. To do so, I feel that we need to be patient. How do I be patient with new information? In my experience, the necessity for rapid decision-making is rare. You are not a Wall Street stock broker, banker dude where you have to make decisions super fast. You might be, but it's pretty rare that you're going to have to make a decision that falls out of the parameters I'm about to outline. So to do so successfully, however, requires slow, methodical practice before that rare situation ever comes about. So as someone like Jordan Harbinger would say, actually, I think it's a Chinese proverb, dig your well before you're thirsty. So how we practice is by saying no to an immediate response or demand on that response. I know that there's a good chance that my mind handles new information poorly. I know this about myself. I can get angry really fast. I have a bit of a temper with some things, mostly with food. If I come home and the food that I expect to be in the fridge isn't there, meaning someone ate something I was looking forward to, I snap, I will lose it. And I'm not proud of that. Certainly not proud. But like I said, I know myself really well. I know my mind handles new information poorly, so I give it a chance to shut the fuck up and think. You got to give your mind a chance to just, you know, go ahead and shake and tremble, get red in the face, clench your fist, whatever. And I heard somewhere about a 5-minute rule for new information. I wish I could remember where I heard it. It was probably somewhere on the internet, so you know it's legit. But anyways, it resonated with me, so I'm going to pass it along to you. Take 5 minutes and then respond. If you're in a situation where someone asks you a question and are looking for an immediate response, I have two options to give them. I say, let me get back to you on that, or a flat out no. Even if the consequences might be, well, reasonably high. If it's life or death, obviously you're going to have to make a quick decision, and it won't matter what you're, if you're angry or sad, you just better do something. A few good things in my life have come from making uncalculated answers. Even if I can come up with the appropriate response in 30 seconds and someone wants an answer now, it generally doesn't go well. Making people wait for your response will also make them question what they asked you for in the first place. I know silence is golden. So when someone asks you something and it's outside of your wheelhouse, you don't know how to respond, be silent. Especially if this is someone that you don't know, or maybe someone that you're not sure you can trust. Just take a moment. I have no idea what's going on in the background, by the way, so I apologize for that sound. Anyway, oddly enough, we're talking about silence being golden. I've had people where they would give me some sort of question or demand a response or a reaction, which is worse. And they want it right now. However, I realized that taking the time, even if it's up to 30 seconds, is so powerful. People don't know typically how to respond. And the people who demand these answers right now hate your silence. So what happens is they'll either be patient and they'll wait, or they'll just start talking. Because they're probably not confident in their question or their questioning or their attitude. Maybe they're a little aggressive. They might scale it back a bit. Maybe they'll get more angry. And that's fine. Making people wait for your response will also make them question what they asked you for in the first place. Furthermore, people will also appreciate a silence that is followed by a well-thought answer. People really do appreciate that. So if they really asked you a really thoughtful question, or it really meant a lot to them, they'll really appreciate a good, well thought out answer, even if it is no, because by then you'll be able to back up why you're saying no. Even if it's just as simple as, I don't have a good answer for you, so unfortunately it's going to be no. Maybe that will prompt another question from you, is maybe they can explain the situation a little bit more. But those, like I said, those instances where you have to come up with an answer now are rare, and almost always your immediate answer is going to be not what you wanted. By doing this practice, you allow your mind to make good decisions that aren't based on emotions. And emotions are important and usually are correct for decision-making when it's necessary. For instance, your child could be falling into a fire. And your child could be falling into a fire and you would be scared. That's the necessary emotional response that will give you the ability to act. So we shut down the emotional response by saying no. That means you don't even respond unless you just say, give me a second. Wait 5 minutes, weigh the pros and cons, and then respond. You'll find that the necessity for an immediate response is rare. Rare indeed. When we can control our emotions, we can really give our poor, overstimulated brains the ability to think and choose the correct mindset. This has just been my experience, but I know it's been useful. I'm just terrible at implementing it all the time. I don't know why. But you know what? Like I said, I've been reading this for about a year, and really a lot of your life is just kind of untying the knots you've tied for yourself mentally. Dr. Dweck goes on to elaborate. Self-insight. Who has accurate views of their assets and limitations? Well, maybe the people with the growth mindset don't think they're Einstein or Beethoven, but they aren't more likely to have inflated views of their abilities and try for things they're not capable of. Sorry, I read that wrong. But aren't they more likely to have inflated views of their abilities and try for things they're not capable of? In fact, studies show that people are terrible at estimating their abilities. Recently, we set out to see who is most likely to do this. Sure, we found people greatly misestimated their performance and their ability, but it was those with the fixed mindset who accounted for almost all of the inaccuracy. The people with a growth mindset were amazingly accurate. When you think about it, this makes sense. If, like those with the growth mindset, you believe you can develop yourself, then you're open to accurate information about your abilities, even if it's unflattering. What's more, if you're oriented towards learning as they are, you need accurate information about your current abilities in order to learn effectively. Now I'm going to take a quick break here and say, I know how many times where people think you'll just be in a social gathering. It's happened to me where it will seem like I'm putting myself down and people will be like, no, you're not like that. And about yourself, some sort of admission that might seem negative. And I'll say something like, I'm not really that good at that. And they're like, no, you're fine. And blah, blah, blah. And they'll say something to that effect where they're trying to give me some sort of positive reinforcement where it's not necessary. And I say, and I'm trying to say, no, I'm not good at this, but I'm going to get better at it. I've noticed this in social situations. Don't let anyone talk you out of you knowing how good at something you are or are not. There's a difference between being accurate and just putting yourself down and be like, oh, I suck, I'm the worst, and I'm never going to get better and all that stuff. Then you need someone to go, hey, stupid, you're doing all right. Let's be steady. But anyway, back to the book. However, if everything is good news or bad news about your precious traits, as it is with the fixed mindset people, distortion almost inevitably enters the picture. Some outcomes are magnified, others are explained away. And before you know it, you don't know yourself at all. Howard Gardner, in his book, Extraordinary Minds, concluded that exceptional individuals have, quote, a special talent for identifying their own strengths and weaknesses, end quote. It's interesting that those with the growth mindset seem to have talent, or have that talent, rather. The other thing exceptional people seem to have is a special talent for converting life's setbacks into future successes. Creativity researchers concur. In a poll of 143 creativity researchers, there was a wide agreement about the number one ingredient in creative achievement, and it was exactly the kind of perseverance and resilience produced by the growth mindset. Dr. Dweck has a quick series of questions that challenge you and help you identify what type of mindset you have, or at least which one you're in currently. It's important to know that because everyone can look back at situations and realize, oh, I'm like that, or I have a growth mindset. You might be able to exhibit some of these traits, but the consistency is what matters. And catching yourself when you're not thinking properly is really important. And obviously, well, maybe it's not obvious, but it is to me, that if you're able to govern your emotions, you're able to govern your attitude. And if you are able to govern your attitude, you are able to determine your mindset. So she asks these questions: which mindset do you have? If you answer these questions about intelligence, read each statement and decide whether you mostly agree with it or disagree with it. I'll provide these questions on Facebook so you don't have to worry, but I'm going to read them out, and I'll read them out fairly slowly so that you can follow along. First question: your intelligence is something very basic about you that you can't change very much. I'll say it again. Your intelligence is something very basic about you that you can't change very much. Do you agree or do you disagree? Question two: you can learn new things, but you can't really change how intelligent you are. You can learn new things, but you can't really change how intelligent you are. Do you agree or disagree? Question three: no matter how much intelligence you do have, you can always change it quite a bit. Do you agree or disagree? Number four: you can always substantially change how intelligent you are. You can always substantially change how intelligent you are. Do you agree or do you disagree? Now, for me, I have a little bit of difficulty with being able to change your intelligence, at least in terms of IQ. I've heard of other psychologists say that IQ is incredibly difficult, and at least there is no measurable way of influencing IQ, although apparently scientists have been trying to do so for a long time. By the way, just a little side note. This book briefly mentioned Binet, Dr. Binet. He was a French psychologist, and he came up with the IQ, an IQ test. If you'd like, you can message me on any of my platforms, and I will tell you a little bit more about that chapter in which Carol Dweck mentioned Dr. Binet. But anyway, carrying on. Questions one and two are the fixed mindset questions. Questions three and four reflect the growth mindset. Which mindset did you agree with more? I'll stop there and go back to the questions. First question was: your intelligence is something very basic about you that you can't change very much. Do you agree or disagree? Number two: you can learn new things, but you can't really change how intelligent you are. Did you agree with that? Which mindset did you agree with more? Now, questions three and four: no matter how much intelligence you have, you can change quite a bit. And question four: you can always substantially change how intelligent you are. Questions three and four reflect the growth mindset. So which mindset did you agree with more? You can be a mixture, but most people lean toward one or the other. You also have beliefs about other abilities. And you could substitute artistic talent, sports ability, or business skill for intelligence. So let's try it. Question one was: your intelligence is something very basic about you that you can't change very much. Now we'll use something that's relevant for us, the people who are interested in biology and physiology and physical performance. Your physical performance or sports ability is something very basic about you that you can't change very much. As soon as you change it up and you put performance or sports ability in place of intelligence, suddenly the question seems absolutely ridiculous. This is why I think that this book is incredibly powerful, and powerful especially for people who are concerned with sports and performance. So we'll try it with another question. Question two, because these are the fixed mindset questions, we're going to replace intelligence, obviously, with sports ability. You can learn new things, but you can't really change your sports ability. That's ridiculous. You obviously know you can. So when you realize that intelligence isn't the factor, it's consistency and your attitude, or perhaps the attitude that will create the consistency. It seems obvious that you can move forward knowing this. It's not only your abilities, it's your personal qualities too. Look at these statements about personality and character and decide whether you mostly agree or mostly disagree with each one. There's three questions coming up. First one, you are a certain kind of person and there's not much that can be done to really change that. Do you agree or disagree? I'll say it again. You're a kind of person. You are a certain kind of person, rather, and there is not much that can be done to really change that. Question two, no matter what kind of person you are, you can always change substantially. Question three, you can do things differently, but the important parts of who you are can't really be changed. Cannot really be changed. Your personality mindset comes into play in situations that involve your personal qualities. For example, how dependable, cooperative, caring, or socially skilled you are. The fixed mindset makes you concerned with how you'll be judged. I'll say that again. The fixed mindset makes you concerned with how you'll be judged. And you find that people will often project the judgment of themselves or what they think they're being judged for onto their friends or family. I've done it. People do it to me all the time. Your parents do it to you. You know, you tell them that you want to be an artist. You can't do that. It doesn't make money. And then you become afraid of being judged based on this because you're not making any money and you probably won't make much money as an artist. But you'll be happy. Maybe. The growth mindset makes you concerned with improving. Even if you are an artist, it doesn't matter if it's some sort of calculable thing, some sort of measurement that or a yardstick for success, maybe in business, maybe you create a Fortune 500 company. That's fairly easy to understand. You can still improve with art. You can improve with anything. Even if you don't have four limbs, people still manage to work out somehow. I don't know how they do it, but they do it. Here are some more ways to think about mindset. Or mindsets, plural. Think about someone you know who is steeped in the fixed mindset. Think about how they're always trying to prove themselves and how they're super sensitive about being wrong or making mistakes. I've been that guy. You might have been that person. Who knows? Did you ever wonder why they were this way? Are you this way? Now you can begin to understand why. Think about someone you know who is skilled in the growth mindset, someone who understands that it's important qualities that can be cultivated. Think about the ways they confront obstacles. Think about the things they do to stretch themselves. What are some ways you might like to change or stretch yourself? Okay, now imagine you've decided to learn a new language. And you've signed up for a class. In my case, I have not signed up for a language class and I'm living in Spain. Maybe I should do so. Right now, it's a little bit out of the question. A few sessions into the course, the instructor calls you to the front of the room and starts throwing questions at you one after the other. Put yourself in a fixed mindset. Your ability is on the line. Can you feel everyone's eyes on you? Can you see the instructor's face evaluating you? I know I get that here when I don't speak Spanish. Ooh, you can cut the tension with a knife. Feel your ego bristle and waver. What else are you thinking and feeling? Now put yourself in a growth mindset. You're a novice. That's why you're here. You're here to learn. The teacher is a resource for learning. Feel the tension leave you. Feel your mind open up. The message is, you can change your mindset. Thank you very much for listening to today's episode. This is episode 21. I didn't say that really at the beginning, but this is all about mindset, and this episode is a successor to the previous episode, which was about flow, the psychology of optimal experience. And we talked about how flow states can help you with consistency. In this case, it flowed naturally into, or at least for me, into mindsets and how you need to adopt the correct mindset to achieve flow states. It's been so hard to talk with a cold. And there's going to be, the series is going to continue probably on for another couple more episodes on the same book. And then maybe we'll get into some sports psychology with some more wonderful tips from Eddie O'Connor and his book, which I already did an episode on, but I promised I'd get back to it. So if you're not following me on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube, you can do so on my Instagram. My handle is @hero_kbells. My Facebook is @hero_kbells, and YouTube is @herobells. You can get all sorts of free content there to help you get in shape. Maybe not the best shape. You wonder why? Because that stuff's free. But you know what? You're going to get into pretty damn good shape really quick and inexpensively and very effectively. I'm pretty sure you're going to like all the content on all those channels, and you'll be able to get any of the supplemental material from these episodes on my Facebook and my Instagram stories. Obviously, the Instagram stories are temporary, so if you want to make sure that you have this resource available to you all the time, you can go to my Facebook page and like it in order to get in there and get those resources. But anyway, thank you very much for checking this out, and I hope you listen to the next one. If you have no idea what the hell I've been talking about or how this is related, listen to the other episodes. Thank you very much. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I hope this podcast was useful to you. I want to let you know that I have more tips and workouts available on YouTube that will also help you along the way of your training. Just search Hero Bells and please comment. I love comments. Like and subscribe, turn on notifications, and check in often. Thanks so much again. Have a great day.